Game On on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.
You're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM on this Monday night. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock this evening. Damien Hayes will take us through Galway's brilliant win against Tipperary yesterday. Eamon Dunphy on the weekend's Premier League action. We're also going to check out tonight's League of Ireland games. Rugby with Bernard Jackman after Ireland's win against Scotland at the weekend. And European boxing champion Michael Conlon as well. All that to come. 51552 is our text number at Game On 2FM on Twitter. And I'm delighted to say we have Alan Cawley and Darren O'Neill in studio with me. How are you doing, lads?
Evening, Hugh.
You are a happy man today after Jason Day's victory last night.
Jason Day, yeah. I'm doing okay at the golf.
Are you?
I'm doing okay.
What about actually playing it though?
Oh no, well look,
still
I'm not worried
about
that. Can't win any money playing it.
But I tell you, there was a stage last night when Brandon Grace made a little bit of a move and Jordan Spieth had, a putt to go one behind, and I wondered would Jason Day wobble. And I genuinely, because I really wanted him to win.
I think everyone wanted him to win, didn't
he? He's just such a brilliant golfer, first of all, but equally such a really good guy, I think, on tour, if you talk to Gary and people who actually know him. But he was brilliant.
He was absolutely... Well, the commentators kept saying, I suppose, the night before when you're going out in the final round of a major and you're winning and you're trying to win your first one, I'm sure you're dreaming of getting off to an absolutely brilliant start and everything going according to plan. It doesn't always pan out that, as we've seen in the past with lads leading going into the final round. But I think he was 3 under after 6 and he got off to a dream start, Hugh.
Yeah.
And as you said, he just continued it on. From there on, he was he played unbelievable golf. There was fireworks Saturday night. The golf on Saturday night was just, I've never seen anything like it. There was just birdies going in everywhere. Every one of them seemed to be playing out of their skin. It never really hit them heights last night, I didn't think. There was no fireworks, but it was still brilliant. But that was, I think, because he was in control of the whole situation. And as you said, Brandon Grace started brilliant as well, but he had a 6, I think, on the 10th. And
yeah, that put him out of contention.
They never really got near to him, in fairness. There was always that 2-shot cushion. He might have went to 3, back to 2, but no one ever got it to 1. And he was comfortable in the end, and he finished it off brilliantly.
I met Elvis Presley, the real life Elvis Presley, last night in a Portlaoise pub.
We've seen the photo.
I tell you what, it's amazing. I genuinely thought he was dead, and all these people said, no, Elvis is not dead. I met him last night, and I actually believe now that he's not dead. He's singing in a Portlaoise pub.
Did you sing a duet with him?
Oh man, there's only room for one man on stage when that lad's up there, I tell you. He cleared the place. Darren, you're recovered suitably. You had a long flight yesterday in terms of like leaving at 2:30. Was it 2:30 on Saturday?
Yeah, 2:30 Saturday morning. And we got back, their 2 hours ahead of here, so it was only 12:30 really. And we got back at 5 or 5:30 yesterday.
That's
evening,
a, so long, a long time to be travelling from Bulgaria as well.
Yeah. We had to go to Munich and then wait there for 6 or 7 hours and then back home. Long spin, to be fair, but look, it's good to be back in Irish style, you know.
Yeah, and in terms of, look, okay, put your captain's hat on for a moment, if you don't mind, before the personal stuff, which we'll talk to later on. How did the team feel about how the European Championships went?
Fantastic. We had a team meeting, as we do at the end of every competition. And, you know, Billy and the rest of the team, you know, obviously spoke first, and then passed it around to the other staff and, you know, came to me then, and all the individual boxers, but... couldn't have asked for better, you know. Two gold, a bronze, you know, and 4 out of 6 of us have qualified for the world championships. But you know, those of us who lost to the eventual gold or silver medalist.
Yeah,
you know, we finished second as a nation for the 4th or 5th European Championships in a row, behind only Russia, you know, who are obviously one of the strongholds of the world.
I was going through the statistics today. Since 2003, when Gary Keegan and Billy kind of set up the high performance, you know. 90 senior medals at international competitions Ireland has won. 38 gold, 21 silver and 31 bronze medals. That is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's absolute madness. My parents actually tell me, you know, I suppose probably since that time when I joined the team, at a junior and then senior level, I have something like 24 international medals.
That just,
you know, so I say, you say 90,
a bigger house.
I'd say it's even more, to be honest. I mean, if I have 24, you take Eric Donovan, you take Kenny Egan, you know, obviously Michael Conlon, Paddy Barnes, you know, Joe Ward's, all of them have massive medals. So if you counter in the fact that there's underage medals being won, you know, almost every month, it's been phenomenal. A decade or so of boxing for Ireland.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about the week that was at the European Championships a little bit later on in the show with Michael Conlon, of course, gold medalist, and so impressive to everybody else bar himself. In fairness, I suppose you are your own harshest critic of these
worst
things.
Worst enemies, yeah, we are.
Worst
enemy and hardest critics, to be fair. But look, I suppose it depends on the individual. I'm quite critical of myself, and I know Michael is as well. But it works for us because it's, you know, it drives us on and helps us to improve. But other lads, need a, you know, need to be cuddled, as you say. But yeah. I mean, it's an individual sport and individual needs.
Yeah, absolutely. A massive night tonight in terms of the Airtricity League full programme, Alan, and you know, big games at the bottom as well as the top. Dundalk are still looking so strong, but a couple of teams in trouble that need to win tonight, do you think?
There is, yeah. It's brilliant, Hugh, because I suppose Friday night was a full fixture of games that there is every week. Tonight we have the same, and there's so intriguing the fixtures because there's so much riding on nearly every game. I suppose it looked like Limerick were dead and buried going back only 2 weeks ago. They've had three wins on the bounce, JJ.
Yeah, he's sticking his arm up there.
Three wins on the bounce. They've given themselves a lifeline, Hugh, and they've sucked all the others back in because Sligo got a win as well the other night. And they've sucked the likes of Longford, Drogheda, Galway, all of them all of a sudden are looking around their shoulders. So there's huge games. They're all kind of playing against each other tonight as well, as are the boys at the top. But as you said, it was a really bad result for Cork on Friday night, losing to Limerick. And I'd say it's kind of knocked the sting out of them now. They have to go to Tala and win tonight, which will be a tough game as well, because Shamrock Rovers have won four of the last five. St Pat's as well are on an unbelievable run. They've won their last nine games, absolutely brilliant form. So I think Dundalk probably have it sewn up, but there's still lots to play for in all the other games, definitely.
Yeah, Cork City have kicked off in Tala against Shamrock Rovers tonight. You imagine they have to pretty much win, or the title is as good as all.
Yeah, they have to win up
even,
there.
Even at this stage, you're making a soft case that Dundalk.
Yeah, and in fairness to them, John Caulfield's done a brilliant job, Hugh. They've won all, like, I think their last 12 games they've been unbeaten, winning nine. And to lose against Limerick, of all the teams to lose their kind of great run against, nobody would have given Limerick a prayer, even though they had won a couple of matches. So I'm sure they were bitterly disappointed, but they have to get back on the horse again and try and win in Tala, as you said tonight.
Ken Egan has texted us in. Councillor Kenneth, as we call him now.
Of course, yeah.
Don't forget Elzora, lads, which we absolutely wouldn't. And let's address that quickly then. I mean, Zor, in terms of his technical ability as a coach, I've spoken to Ken about it, spoken to you about it. The guy has a huge amount to do with the success that is the Ireland boxing team.
Yeah, and Kenny's right to say that. You know, sometimes you see, I've seen online even today, you know, an article about Kenny and Billy, and you know, and how important Billy has been, and he has been, without a shadow of a doubt. But I suppose over the last few years there's been a lot of procedures and stuff need to be followed, and a lot of office work needs to be done, and Billy, you know, takes care of a lot of that. So he's mixing between coaching and administrative stuff, but Zara's on the floor every single day. He's the technical mastermind of Irish boxing, without a shadow of a doubt. He's taught us, you know, I suppose there was a time we used to be called the Fighting Irish, and don't get me wrong, we still have that in us, but we're now very, very technical, you know. So yeah, something that that we spoke about, as I said, that meeting last night, we don't doubt ourselves, or I suppose fought ourselves technically against any nation in the world. Without a doubt, we're up there with the best of them. We have every skill possible, and Zora's drumming that into us day in, day out. And there's days he'd be there thinking, oh God, no, not again. But he just drills it in every single day, and he's always looking for the new, I suppose, I won't say trend, but you know, he's looking for a new breakthrough. What's the best in the world doing? How can we better that? And you know, he's teaching that not only to the boxers but other coaches. So you know, he's been vitally important to
it. Just goes to show as well, sorry Hugh, even from us looking in from the outside, well, as you said, the stats that you read out there from, I think, going back to 2003 when the high performance unit was put together, it just goes to show what can be achieved when there's a concerted effort of top class professionalism put into something, and you see what the boys achieve and the results over a period of time. And even for us, like, looking in as the names you're just listing off there, the boys have become household names now, almost. Like, it's, and there's an expectation, like, it was no surprise when you see maybe 2 or 3 years ago you'd be looking at Twitter or Facebook and someone would win a medal and be like, oh, fair play to him. It was almost, there was an expectation that, look, Michael Collins is going to win the gold or whatever once he got to the final, or and that expectation level is just, it just goes to show what has been achieved over the years.
Well, there's obviously reports that Eric Donovan is back training. He's done a bit of commentary for us over the weekend. He's obviously got his eye on the national as well. Ken Egan, we hear, has put on a lot of weight over the last 6 months. So Ken, if you want to go for the old super heavies now, Dean Gardner, give him a bit of competition in the national.
Yeah, keep going, Kenny, keep going. Don't stop a heavy.
Okay, if you missed anything that happened over the weekend, and it was a brilliant weekend, aside from the hurling, here is what happened.
Passage of play. Mannion there frantically scrambling for possession, and David Burke two for Galway. Here's Joe Canning in the centre of the field. Canning in his own half. He's right, reverse the burst, pass over to the right corner. There's a chance opening up for Galway here. Is this a chance for Galway?
Yeah, I think every time they scored a big goal or got a couple of points, we came back. Really, we scored a couple of points after time. Every time they got a goal and kept in the match and stayed to the plan, really, which is a good sign of this team. But nothing we do today won't be of any significance, really, if we don't win the next day. That's how hard this game is.
I didn't make the decision. If it was to me, I'd still be fine in Limerick. I'd take a week or two out of training and I would have been fine to get back into it.
Back with Madigan. Madigan with the crossfield kick. Luke Bashar goes chase.
There's some good points, but there's plenty to work on. Obviously, them scoring three tries, I think we conceded three tries in the whole of the Six Nations. So I've no doubt that the challenges we've faced so far from Wales last week, Scotland today, will enter a whole new world in 2 weeks' time with Wales coming here.
I'm very pleased because it was a football aspect. And the quality of our gaming period at a much higher pace.
Very happy as a manager, and I think also that we have played better than when you have to compare it with the game against Tottenham.
Their second and third goal, I can also say that is my player mistake. We were the best team, but that's not enough.
And he is the winner. Michael Conlon is the European champion. Is it the gold medal, his second in the elite Europeans? It is. Joe Ward is the champion of Europe.
It has been quite a journey for you already, hasn't it?
Oh, it's been a long journey. I mean, just I didn't expect to ever grow up, be on the PGA Tour, and then, I mean, I'm going to be a little emotional here, but it's an amazing feeling, just the work that I've put into my game ever since I was a 12-year-old kid, and to be able to stand in front of a crowd like this today and win the PGA Championship is pretty special.
Brilliant stuff from JJ there. You know the old blind date? Here's our Graham with a quick reminder. Here's our JJ with a quick reminder. What do you reckon?
He's the new Graham.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, listen, we're going to move on. And what was that, JJ? I'm the new Silla. Oh, man, I do have the hair, in fairness. Okay, all right, I have to take that one on the chin. Weekend, Can't Feel My Face, the name of the track, by the way. Appropriate that we have Darren O'Neill in the studio for that one. Listen, an incredible game at Hurling in Croke Park yesterday, where Galway beat Tipperary to book their place in the All-Ireland Hurling Final against Kilkenny. I'm joined on the line now by former Galway hurler Damien Hayes. It's great to have you on, Damien. Thanks for coming in.
No problem, Tyson.
Look, it was a pretty amazing 70 minutes in Croke Park yesterday and just what the championship needed, you feel?
Oh, it was a super game of hurling yesterday. It was really enjoyable. And when it was in Croke Park, really enjoyed the game. And to be honest, I think the hurling championship really needed that game yesterday. And everyone was really looking forward to Galway versus Tipperary, and it really lived up to expectations. And it was a super game of hurling. Very, very enjoyable 73 minutes.
I mean, the first thing to say is that even though there was only a point in it, Galway absolutely deserved the win.
Absolutely. Without question, I felt, you know, Galway had got a terrible start, so they did, you know. They went 1-1 down, so they did, but they knuckled down to the job, so they did, Galway did. They had a work rate, they had an energy, they had a work-like attitude, so they had, and I just felt Galway had more fire and power up front, you know, where Tipperary, you know, with the exception of Seamus Canlan, you know, they just weren't scoring enough, so they weren't. And I felt Galway deserved a win, definitely. I thought Galway were the better team on the day.
Because, you know, reading the main criticism of Galway over the years has been the question marks around their mental resilience. When the chips get down and times get tough, do they have that grit and fight to dig themselves back into it? I mean, they battled back so many times yesterday, Damien. They answered all questions.
And, you know, credit must be given to the management too, Anthony Cunningham and his whole selection team and the job that they're doing a super job, and they are, you know, and the boys responded, you know, and that's one thing I have to say about Anthony Cunningham. He's getting the best out of the lads this year. So he is, and the boys went 4 points down, so they did, and they brought it back and they levelled it again. So, you know, Seamus Canlan got his third goal, they put them four up, and Galway stayed plugging, they never gave in the heart. We used our bench well, so we did, and I thought our middle eight, in particular for Galway yesterday, were particularly excellent. So they weren't, you know, they did show resilience, definitely.
That middle eight that you mentioned, I mean, they seem supreme athletes, Damien. I'm just wondering what kind of conditioning they've been doing over the last couple of years.
Tom French has been the physical conditioning coach inside there, and he's been doing an excellent job. So he has, you know, and it's no different to any inter-county setup. So it's not, you know, and probably the Galway hurlers. have trained harder over the years than any other setup in the country, you know, and we're starting to, you know, reap the rewards, and they're in the All-Ireland final, and deservingly so, you know, and but the lads are in super condition, absolutely super, top-notch condition, and the boys, I reckon if the game was on for another 2 or 3 minutes, they would have pushed on, the boys would have pushed on to do it, and, no, fair dues to them, absolutely brilliant performance.
Did you think that Anthony Cunningham should have reacted to Seamus Callanan and the damage he was causing in front of goal? I mean, the first goal, you'd say, fine, you know, see what happens. But when the second goal went in and they were very similar in nature and just in terms of him getting the better, do you feel that there was a case maybe that there should have been a movement, there should have been a substitution,
yeah,
perhaps?
Yeah, look, it's easy to say it now, you know. Hindsight's a great thing, you know, and maybe there could have been a move, you know. But Anthony has great faith in Pádraig, you know, and Pádraig's been having a super season, no more than his own brother, Cahill. So they are in two great lads, you know, and they've played all the league, you know, and but he stuck with Pádraig, you know, and Pádraig, like yesterday, you know, Pádraig, I suppose, had a tough day out, you know, but it was a huge learning curve for Pádraig. And I tell you one thing, what happened to him yesterday, Mark and Seamus Callanan, I tell you, who's one of the top forwards in the game, one of the best hurlers in the country, will stand him for the All-Ireland final. And I often remember, you know, in 2010 when we played Tipperary, so we did in Croke Park, and I was marking Mickey Cahill, and it was his first season, you know, and I possibly got the better of Mickey Cahill that day, and I was chatting his father a couple of weeks later, and he said that what that did for Mickey, you know, his confidence going in, and he had a super All-Ireland, and I expect Pádraig to have a super All-Ireland over what happened to him yesterday, because it's a huge learning curve.
Yeah, and equally, I mean, the people who are a lot more knowledgeable about hurling than me would have suggested that nobody could have actually handled Callanan yesterday for those balls. He was just on form.
It's the truth, because, you know, we switched over Hansbury on him, so he was a big man, fine athlete. So he had a next year high ball went in, and he caught another one over Hansbury. And, you know, and John Hansbury took him down, and fair play to him, because, you know, he only got a point out of the... out of the penalty instead of maybe a goal, you know. So Seamus was just in that type of form that, you know, he couldn't be taken yesterday. But saying that, I don't think the Tipperary team used Seamus. I've seen an awful lot of long range wides being hit and Seamus Callanan looking for ball, and they weren't hitting it into him. So I was sort of amazed by that they weren't hitting it into him, even though they knew he was doing the damage.
Yeah. So, how do you think Tipperary fans will feel about this then? I mean, you have to give credit to massive credit to Galway, but equally, there might be a few in Tip saying that they've been playing so well for the majority of the championship that perhaps they didn't hit those heights again yesterday.
No, they didn't hit the heights, but you know what they've done in the past and what they've done over the last couple of weeks doesn't matter. It's down to that 70 minutes, you know, and you can't play the game today, so you can't. And got their opportunity yesterday to play it, and they weren't let hurl. Galway were up for it, and Galway were all over them, and Galway got the better of them. I actually think Galway won way more breaking ball than Tipperary did yesterday. So they, and like, I think Tipperary maybe were shocked by Galway, how good Galway were and how up for it they were. And Tipperary did not play well, but they won. Let's play well. That's the truth.
I believe you might have had a divided house yesterday. A certain former All-Star from Tipperary and your own roots was there. It was an interesting match, I'd say, to watch in your house.
Oh, it was. It was interesting enough. There was lots of elbows, so there was. But look, as I said to you, it was a super game, and we're absolutely delighted that Galway won, you know. And it's great to see Galway back in the All-Ireland final in September. And there's a huge hype, there's huge excitement, and it's great. We were there in 2012 and we felt we could have won it, felt we should have won it, and you know, we're getting maybe another opportunity, and the lads have a great opportunity in this All-Ireland, really, really have, you know, super opportunity. And you know, Galway I think Galway have a right good chance in this All-Ireland final, a serious, serious chance.
I think everybody outside of Kilkenny would love to see them go and do it. Listen, Damien, thanks a million. It was a fantastic game. Appreciate your time.
Not at all. Thanks a million.
Super. Damien Hayes there. Yeah, his wife, if you didn't get the reference, his wife Claire was a former Tipperary All-Star, so I'd imagine it was interesting scenes. I tell you what, on the basis of that performance, and I'm sitting across from a Kilkenny man here, Kilkenny should be worried if Galway can reproduce that kind of form.
Yeah, I was looking at a few articles today. Eddie Brennan saying that Kilkenny won't be worried. A little nervous, but won't be worried. I'd agree with it, being a Kilkenny person, but having said that, when you look at it, that Tipperary team are very, very good. You know, you're saying Seamus Callan's the only one who played well, but as I spoke to you before we came on air, he had 40 yards in front of me. You know, the play was designed to leave the space in front of Callan and leave the fullback stranded by himself. So, you know, maybe Andy Cunningham could have made a change, but, you know, he was definitely going to be, I suppose, picked out or singled out by the team. You know, that was, I think that was their plan, and obviously it worked very well for him. But
they should have done it more.
They should have done it more. They should have. How many times have we seen him standing by himself? Oh. A few times he's standing on the edge of the square by himself, holding his hands up, saying, "Why didn't you pass
the ball into me?" Yeah,
yeah, and the pumping. But
should you not be worried going into every final? I don't think Kilkenny can say we're not worried. Well, I think that's a bit of a ridiculous statement.
Well, I think their record, and everything they've done means they should fear nobody. So the suggestion was that actually they might be a little bit more wary of Galway than they would have, say, Tipperary.
Yeah, I think they're going to be as nervous coming in after seeing Galway play as well. They'll come in with the mindset that we know how to win finals. We are the reigning champions. We're playing well. We've beaten
Galway. I get that they're the favourites and all, and of course they're favourites, and as you said, everything they've done and achieved in the game. But I still don't think, I think from listening to Brian Cody over the years and all, he'll give Galway the utmost respect, as he would to any of the opposition, and you have to. So, but I don't think he'll be going in thinking, we're not worried. You have to be worried about no matter who you're playing.
Oh yeah, they're not going in thinking that they're going to walk through this and it's going to be an easy final for them. They definitely won't. And I'd agree, it won't be an easy final. You know, they were quality forwards. John Bubbles Wires had a great year. He didn't get a sniff of the ball.
And Galway are in a position now where nobody's going to give them a chance against Kilkenny. They're in it.
Oh, I do.
I think everyone will. I mean, I mean
they'll be going in as underdogs. So
they will be underdogs. Yeah. Well,
so they'll have nothing to lose in that sense.
But I tell
sense.
You what, you think back to that Leinster final. That is a different Galway team.
Oh, completely. That, I said to you, I wasn't impressed with that game at the time. I told you the Munster final was more exciting. I didn't think the hurling was as good, but I thought it was more exciting. I just thought the Leinster final lacked a bit. Kilkenny just did enough to get across the line, what they needed to do. They never really got out of third gear, but I think they're going to have to hit top gear to beat this Galway team.
And that's why I can't wait for this one.
There was a different intensity about them yesterday. The pace of the game was unreal.
The forwards have been flying. Their backs are controlling Tipperary forwards that have been playing well all year. So, you know.
Plus, there's not so much more of an onus on Joe Canning to do everything now. All the other lads have stepped up. Exactly. Yeah. And they've been brilliant, the other boys.
The midfield are playing great.
That's sideline cut.
Yeah.
That is just.
Look, there was a few brilliant moments. Yeah. Absolutely outstanding.
His pass for the winning point. I mean. The whole place screaming. There's 30 seconds on the clock, and he has just that little extra half seconds of composure to pick out the brilliant pass for the final winning point.
But they're starting to show their depth and talent as well. I mean, we know Canning's great in freeze, but they passed over a long range one to John Flynn at one stage, and he just straight over the bar, to level the game.
Incredible game.
Great confidence.
Galway on the way now. Was hoping for Waterford against Kilkenny in the final, but Galway showed their determination and held their nerve and deserved the win all the way against Tipperary. Hope Galway go on. I think it's basically Kilkenny against the rest, which is going to galvanise them. Okay, look, we're going to have to move on. We might come back to this a little bit later on, but it's nil all, by the way. 18 minutes gone in Tala Stadium, Shamrock Rovers against Cork City. Eamon Dunphy's on the line. Hey, Eamon.
Hi, Hugh.
Good to talk to you again. It's been a few weeks, and the season is back with a bang, I suppose, for a few teams. But what is happening at Chelsea, Eamon?
I think there's problems with the owner, not spending money, not being willing to spend money. I think he clearly needed a centre-forward, a 20-goal-a-year centre-forward, because Costa has had this hamstring problem since he was at Atletico Madrid, which is almost 2 years ago now. He missed most of a European Cup final because of it. Had to go off after 15 minutes. He missed a lot of last season. And yet, here he is, the lead striker for Chelsea. And he's not going to get 20 goals this season if he may not even play 20 matches. Now, he's known that all through the summer, presumably. And Loic Remy, who's the replacement, isn't going to get 20 goals. He mightn't even get 10. So you won't win a championship without a proper striker, a real striker. And what have they had to do? They've had to get Falcao, who didn't succeed at Manchester United, maybe not through his own fault, but Falcao doesn't look anything. He's a shadow of the player we knew 2 years, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So he's no striker. And really, there's something lacking in the team. Fabregas is gone. He's gone since last January. He can't put one foot in front of the other. He had a brilliant start to the season last season, and between August and December, he was terrific. But now, he never kicked the ball. for the last half of last season when they won the championship, and neither, incidentally, did Costa do very much in that period. So these problems have been around for 9 months, and he hasn't been able to do anything about them. No replacements brought in. I saw them play a match last week, and it was their reserves, and the reserves are hopeless. I mean, they've nothing there. And if you look at the bench yesterday, they had nothing there to bring on. So, although they're champions, and I tipped them to win it again, and I'd like to take that back immediately. Well, funny enough, I saw Graham Sinnott say the same thing.
Did he?
Yeah, I just assumed that Costa was fit after a rest this summer, two-month rest. But it looks as if it's all gone pear-shaped. But the big thing then is behaviour with the medical staff, and then, of course, falling out with John Terry yesterday, which is really serious.
Okay, well, just
Terry
on that,
rock.
Just on that, Eamon, right? I mean, I just finished reading a book where one of the kind of standout themes from it is that character is not when things are going well, right? Character is when things aren't going well, or the chips are down, and you have the composure and good grace to address the troubles that are in front of you. On that basis, Jose Mourinho, for me, has next to no character.
I agree with that. I wrote a piece for Star last week saying I described it as class. No class, but you're right. It's the defining thing in character, and that's when he was at his worst in Spain, when they couldn't, when he first went there, they couldn't get close to Barcelona. That's when he poked Titi Villanova in the eye, and that's when he was getting up to his antics on the touchline with Guardiola, and when his team were badly behaved as well. Eventually, they did get to Barcelona, and you know, in the last couple of years, they were, you know, winning games against Barcelona, but he showed no class then either. And you know, he's tempestuous, he's immature. What he did to the medical staff, and particularly to the woman involved, was really, really cheap. And you just wouldn't do that if you had the character thing, you know?
Yeah, and you know what? It's something, Alan, that, you know, Jose Mourinho has tried to beat Arsene Wenger with over the last few years and try and get at him. But I can't ever see Arsene Wenger behaving like the way Jose Mourinho has done over the last while.
No, and he's never had any class. That's the thing about it, Hugh. Never, since the day he walked into the Premiership, has he ever had any class. I've never had any time for Mourinho. Fair enough, he's a great manager. But we could have managed half the teams that he's managed. He walks into clubs, spends millions. Here he is now cribbing and crying because he can't sign a couple of players. He's already spent millions on this team. He bought Fabregas and Costa last year when he needed them. Fair enough, he hasn't got the players this year. They're crying out for Stones. I know Eamon's a huge admirer of John Terry, and I am too over the years. He's been a great player. Terry's finished. I watched him last week against Swansea, all over the place. Where he knows he needs Stones because Cahill is not up to it. Then he takes Terry off yesterday. There were shambles yesterday as well, and I think there's serious problems going on behind the scenes. And here we get the typical Mourinho, as you said, rather than when the chips are down, roll up the sleeves and get stuck in, he starts cribbing and crying and moaning and fighting with everyone.
Is John Terry finished, Eamon, in your view?
No. I don't agree with Alan, and I still think he's the best centre-half in England. I think he was critical, pivotal figure last year. He played every single minute of every single game. He's a magnificent organiser of defence, and I don't think he's finished, and I don't think he was playing bad yesterday. You know, Aguero had a lot of support and he had chances. But in the goal, is the first goal he scored, there were four Chelsea players around him. And funny enough, John Terry wasn't one of them. Cahill was around him, Matic was around him. But Terry was not far away. But you couldn't in any way blame Terry. And again, Mourinho referred to the pass in the first minute from David Silva to Aguero. You couldn't blame John Terry. It was a brilliant pass. And the defenders did get back and harass Aguero. He didn't score a goal. I think John Terry is as strong now as he's ever been. He's never been quick. He's old, but he's. I don't agree with that, Alan. I'm surprised to hear you say it.
Why do you think he's?
I just think he is, and it's. It's
that's
not
the Niall
not
Quinn line from yesterday.
I'm better than him. Alan. Come on.
Well, I'm on the same page as Graham Souness. One.
No, look, Terry, don't get me wrong. Terry has been the best centre-half in the Premiership that we've seen in the last 20 years since it started. He's been absolutely brilliant, always. But there comes a time in everybody's career when the legs just give up on you and the body. Now, he's come out in pre-season and said he's never felt better. Fair enough, he had a great season last year, and all credit to him. He was instrumental in them winning the title, how good he is in terms of the organisation, everything about his game. But I just feel, I watched him last week and there was incidents going on, fellas getting in behind him, out, getting caught out of position. And once the legs give up on you, no matter how good you are at reading the game, Hugh, and we've seen it again yesterday at times, Mourinho wouldn't have taken him off had he not been struggling. And I think there's serious problems going on. And maybe it's just a thing where he's saying, by taking off his captain and his talisman, that how much he needs to get Stones in, because, or whoever it may be, a centre-half, and maybe it's sending out a signal to Abramovich. But I do think Terry's best days are behind him. And it'll be proven over the course of the season.
Are Wayne Rooney's best days behind him, Eamon?
Well, if you're using Alan's yardstick, yeah, they have been. And maybe they have been for a while. But I never saw anything like his performance on Friday night from him.
Yeah.
He was just clueless and he looked dispirited, and he didn't look great against Spurs the previous week either. He hasn't had a shot on target. He looks bereft of confidence. Wayne Rooney's only 30 years of age. I think he's had to carry a burden for a very long time. He's a player who started out at Everton, played his first game in the Premier League when he was 16.
Yeah.
So you'd have to consider burnout as a factor, but I would say, to be fair to Rooney, he's totally without support up front in a pretty mediocre team. But he was really worryingly shocking. I mean, he reminded me of myself on Friday night, and that's bad, you know.
Wow.
For a guy who's on 300 grand a week. Just to go back to John Terry.
Yeah.
John Terry was magnificent last year for Chelsea. You can't say after two games this season he's gone. John Terry is a magnificent centre-half. I mean, Vincent Kompany had a bad time for City last year, another leader. But Rooney's situation is really interesting too, because he was really bad in the two games we've seen, but much worse against Villa than he was against Spurs.
To use a rugby analogy then, right? I mean, you know, we had a situation with Leinster in Ireland where someone like Ian Madigan, Eamon, was being asked to play 10, 12, 15 and even 13 a couple of times, and as a result he never really progressed in any of the positions because he was being chopped and chained and moved around and asked to do all sorts of different things. Wayne Rooney has suffered over the last three or four years by managers who don't seem to know where to play him.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Ferguson started that a very long time ago, 6-7 years ago. He's playing him on the left side of midfield, out wide, away from home in European Cup matches, Champions League matches. And he's so good technically and so willing that you can always play him anywhere and get a performance. Don't forget, Van Gaal had him in midfield last year when he first went to United. He played Rooney in midfield. So he has been messed around, and that can wreck a player's head because you just don't know what you are after a while. You know, they're using him like odd job, and that's been going on for a very long time. So I totally agree with that idea that you lose your identity as a player if you're being shifted around a place like that.
Yeah, I mean, Alan, that's, you know, we're going to get team news from Liverpool now in a sec, but on Wayne Rooney, I mean, it seems because he can do a job everywhere, but that doesn't mean that he should do a job everywhere.
No, and we've discussed this, Eamon and myself, last year, numerous occasions, Hugh. The problem with Rooney is because he's such a willing lad that if you asked him playing goals, he's almost like an old school footballer and he'd be a manager's dream. If you said to him, look, Wayne, you have to climb the floodlights and play right full, I'll do it for you, no problem. He'd be a manager's dream like that. But the problem you have there is he's your best player. They should be building a team around him. And this is what we've been saying last year, the year before. But as Eamon said, when they're playing him wide left and they were playing him midfield, playing him all over the place. And the point, though, that I'd like to pick up on, I think it's a good one, there's a lot of miles on the clock with Rooney. There really is, as Eamon said, he started off at 16.
Yeah.
And there's been such a reliance, not only at a club level, but at international level as well, Hugh, because he's had the weight of England on his shoulders for the last how many years as well. And we know what they're like in terms of their media and everything. So, yeah, it'd be a worry for me. Friday night's performance was as bad as I've seen him. I love Rooney, but it was a worry, Friday night's performance.
Okay, let's get team news, because Liverpool are taking on Bournemouth in the Premier League tonight, 8 o'clock at Anfield. John Keith is there. Hiya, John.
Yes, hello, you. Yes, well, a big night for Bournemouth. Their fairy tale 7-year rise from administration in the fourth tier to their first away fixture in the Premier League. Their manager, Eddie Howe, makes two changes. New signing, Max Gradle from St Etienne, and Eunan O'Kane, the Derry-born midfielder. They come in for Dan Gosling and Mark Few. Brendan Rodgers, an unchanged side after that opening day victory at Stoke. And it means that Christian Benteke, the $32.5 million signing, is one of four home debutants, along with Nathaniel Clyne, James Milner, and Joe Gomez. And of course, if Liverpool should win tonight, not only would they go level on points with the two Manchester clubs and Leicester, they'd also be five ahead of Chelsea, which even at this early stage is quite a margin. John Keith, Liverpool v Bournemouth.
Super stuff, John. Thank you so much. Okay, domestic matters and closer to home. Oriel Park, Dundalk against St. Pat's. They win here, and you imagine that pretty much the title race is over. Sean Perry is there. Hi, Sean.
Well, that's what the home fans would certainly like to think, Hugh, but 9 points separate top and third in the table, and tonight they meet in perfect conditions in front of what's anticipated to be a bumper crowd here in Oriel Park. The reigning champions got back to winning ways in the Brandywell on Friday night, but new signing and goal scorer in Derry, Kieran Kilduff, isn't available to lead the attack as part of the deal which saw him join the Lily Whites from St. Pat's last month. His old club are again without the injured Christy Fagan, with Killian Brennan and Morgan Langley both suspended. One positive for Liam Buckley is the return of left back Ian Birmingham, who captains the side tonight. Kilduff aside, Stephen Kenny chooses from a full deck, meaning Richie Towell, Daryl Horgan and Stephen O'Donnell will be relied on to produce that creative spark to claim the points. It's the fourth meeting of the sides this season. Dundalk victors on all previous three occasions, twice in the league and once in the President's Cup in the season curtain raiser. Tonight they face a St. Pat's side which is on a club record run of 9 straight victories. Kick-off in Oriel Park. Well, the crowds are still continuing to spill in here. It's just about 7 minutes away at 7.45. Hugh.
Super stuff. Enjoy that one, Sean. Thanks a million for your time. Interesting one ahead. Still no goals at Tala Stadium. Shamrock Rovers 0, Cork City 0. Okay, stay with us. We've rugby and Bernard Jackman coming up after the break.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings.
Okay, line. Michael's text us in to say incompetent refereeing cost the Kilkenny Miners disgusting. I didn't actually see it, Michael. I walked in the door 10 minutes before the senior match was starting off the plane, but I did hear that from the family that they were pretty. Well, they agreed with you, let's just say that. McIlroy won't regain the number one spot again. Speed is a natural putter. McIlroy looks all wrong putting, hands cocked awkwardly, making Cork make. He's done pretty well with cocked hands so far. Rubbish. Gary Murphy, though, will basically take that one tomorrow. He's basically, by the way, taking 50 to 1 on Jose Mourinho that he won't last the season, Gary Murphy. What game is Dunphy watching? Terry is finished, says Tony in Wexford. He agrees with you, Alan. It's rumoured that Mourinho is trying to sign a few physios before the transfer window closes, says Simon in Donegal. And Councillor Kenneth Egan's been back in touch, says, I am a dead man walking. Kenny, Kenny, you'd have to catch me first, fatty. Bernard Jackman, how are you?
Great, thank you.
Yeah, good to talk to you. What did you make of the game on Saturday, the Ireland-Scotland match?
Yeah, it wasn't a great spectacle, to be honest, but I think from Joe Schmidt and the Irish manager point of view, they'll be a lot happier with the contest they had, and obviously than the week before. And I think just for Ireland getting confidence of coming back from behind and getting themselves in a difficult situation and thinking their way out of it will stand to them. We sorted our defence in the second half. We showed a little bit more intensity in terms of our ball carries and our clear out. And when Madigan got, I suppose, quality ball, go forward ball, he started to pull the strings a little bit better. So, sometimes it's not about, in those preseason games, it's not about having the perfect 80 minutes. It's about finding a way out of whatever difficulties you have. And certainly the Scotland attack asked questions of us that Wales didn't do it before.
That's exactly what I was thinking. After the Wales game, I was wondering, because of the quality of the Wales team and the way they performed, was it a bit of a false dawn that Ireland were getting so much praise so early on? Maybe, you know, the few mistakes, the defensive lapses and conceding tries is exactly what Joe Schmidt needs to kind of galvanise his team, to put a bit of perspective on where they really are.
No, 100%. Like, the last thing you want to do is go into the World Cup with a false idea of where you're actually at. So I think Wales in 2 weeks' time at home will be a far different proposition than the one we played last week, and that's what Joe will want, and he'll probably go with a more fuller strength side. I think he's managed to mix his teams up in both games so far incredibly well and still get two wins, and I suppose one good performance and one not so good but good enough to get a win on the day. But certainly no matter how hard you try at training, you can't be running against live opposition with match fatigue. And the way Scotland play under Verne Cotter, they do tend to play with a lot of width and they play quite deep at times, so it can be hard to get the ball back off them. And because they play so deep and because our line speed was probably a little bit passive, in particularly in the first half, they were able to exploit little dog legs. And I thought Visser and Lamont had really strong games for them. But again, Ireland now will have live match footage to analyse and to correct, and that's invaluable, to be honest. No matter how hard the environment of training they create in the Carlton House, test match conditions and live opposition are always going to be more beneficial.
Everyone you read or listen to seems to have a different opinion on how well Simon Zeebo performed at full back. Obviously, his lines of running were particularly good, but you know, defensive lapses again and positioning. What was your view? Did he do enough to maybe assuage some of the doubts about his game?
I think he did very well. I think he showed again that he's probably the most likely Irish player to win a one-on-one. You know, he has the ability to beat people, which is, in a modern game, it's pretty invaluable. And I thought that under the high ball, which probably there's a question mark about him, you know, there seems to be in the Irish jersey, I thought he dominated the air very well. You know, he gave away a penalty at ruck time for coming in the side. Defensively, potentially could be better, but, you know, he hasn't played a whole lot of 15. I think he had a pretty successful outing. The problem is, in that area, it's so competitive. You know, he's probably competing with Felix Jones as that backup 15. And you know, Felix is a guy who Joe seems to trust and has been involved in Six Nations squads consistently. And that's going to be the test for him. I think Zeebo has more... as more certainly attacking prowess than Felix. It's just whether he can do the small things right, the minute details that Joe demands at a sufficient enough level to make up for or to get him ahead of Felix, who's very 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 compact and doesn't make many mistakes.
So reading between the lines and what you're saying then, I mean, you know, obviously there's a huge amount of competition on the wing as well. You have Tommy Bowe, you have Luke Fitzgerald, Keith Earls now back in the mix, Andrew Trimble if his foot recovers, as well as Dave Kearney. You have Rob Kearney and Felix Jones at full back, and then Simon Zeebo. So, you know, would you be slightly worried if you're in Zeebo's camp that, hang on, he still has a lot of work to do to try and nail down
for sure. I think everybody's going to be are all those guys in that bracket, as you've just said, apart from Tommy and Rob Kearney, are going to have doubts about whether they're going to make it. And we'll be looking to impress at training. There's a rumour going around that potentially Ireland might go with two scrum halves and cover Madigan cover as third choice, which would open up an extra spot for a utility back.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if there's any truth in that, but there's a talk that they would go with two, and because generally the third choice scrum half, it's not like a third choice hooker who you need to have for scrum training, etc. You can probably get by with two scrum halves. It's obviously a risk. Obviously, if someone got injured, he would leave the squad and another special scrum half would go in. Not many teams have done it before, but there's a bit of talk that Ireland might go down that route, which would help the guys like Zeebo, Kearney, Earls, Trimble, McFadden, who might be just on the edge, and an extra back three spot would certainly help their case.
Okay, look, I'm sorry we got squeezed for time, Bernard, but it's great talking to you. Thanks a million for joining us.
No problem, thank you.
Cheers, thanks. Couldn't get the right word there. Thanks a million for being yourself.
Joining us.
51552 is our text number. Manchester City put on one of the most complete Premier League performances in a long time. No mention. All that was discussed was Jose, Terry and Rooney. Not even a mention of a fantastic Wes Hoolan performances. Fair coverage, please, lads. We've talked more about Wes Hoolan in the last 6 months than I think Wes's own family have. So,
I actually declared my love for Wes on Twitter on Saturday night, so he obviously doesn't follow me on Twitter, that lad.
Yeah, and Eamon in his article actually on Star today said that Wes is as good as Ozil is for Arsenal, which is quite a statement. Yeah, I mean, look,
well, City were
brilliant.
City
were brilliant, but we Josie's been in the headlines.
Yeah,
but we wanted to cover at this, but we will come back.
Well, Sylvain Aguero, just in a nutshell, Hugh, Sylvain Aguero were absolutely amazing, and what we said last week even on the show when I tipped City to win it, if Aguero stays fit to win the league, simple.
Okay, not looking good for Cork City at the moment. Their goal down Bennett for Shamrock Rovers there about 5 minutes ago, so 4 minutes to go. Brennan Gavin Brennan scoring for Shamrock Rovers, 4 minutes to go at Talon Stadium to half time. Okay, we have European champion on the line, Mick Conlon. How are you?
How's it going, mate? All good?
Yeah, good. Listen, how did it feel last night to get home with that medal and back to family as a European champion?
Oh, it was fantastic, you know, to get home. Since the first day I got to Bulgaria, I was counting the days down until I got to see my baby and my fiance again. So to finally get home and see them was fantastic.
What was the reaction like, family and friends at home? I know you got a lot of it on social media, but like, were you celebrating last night?
Yeah, no, well, celebrating. We went and had food on the way home from Dublin. We stopped in Carlingford and went to a nice wee restaurant and had a lovely meal, and then just came home and I was so tired, you know, because we were travelling all night and I had to hit the hay and I was up early this morning straight away doing media obligations. So it's been a long day, but it's near over as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, one thing that stood out for me, Mick, watching you during the week is how much stronger you look at bantamweight now versus, say, a couple of years ago when you made that step up, when John Evan didn't make the Worlds and you just jumped in from 52 to 56. You're obviously a lot more comfortable at that weight now.
Yeah, definitely. You know, even though I had a bit of a problem making the weight for the games, you know, the championships there, because I had done it in such a short time, but usually I do it easy and I feel 10 times stronger than what I actually was in the championships. But I feel the move up has helped me build up my power and build up my strength and stuff, and I do feel a lot stronger than what I was before.
Yeah, I mean, Darren, that stood out for me watching Mick there, that he just looks even, you know, a lot stronger and a lot more well-conditioned, because he's a tall guy for bantamweight as well, lest we forget.
Yeah, I suppose Mick will tell you he struggled at 52 for a while. But I think maybe having boxed WSB this season as well, it's more of a professional style, so he's planting his feet a little bit more, punching that bit harder as a result. You know, when you move up to weight first, especially when you're giving away a bit of weight, you just want to move, you don't want to stand and mix with the guys. And, you know, it takes a while to grow into the weight properly, but he's definitely grown into it now. You know, he's hurting guys in every fight.
Mike, what's the main difference between WSB and the format of 3-minute rounds? What is it the pace of those 3-minute rounds, because it's a shorter fight, that you have to start faster and quicker, if you like, or what is it?
Yeah, I think, you know, in the WSB, it's kind of like, so like, you have time to think and you have time to do things, and even if you get caught a wee shot, you know, you have another 4 rounds to get your shots back. You know, you have time. The pace is completely different. You know, you go into a 3-3 pace, and like people are it's like a sprint compared to a marathon in WSB. You know, and you're just going forward, and that's why I think people are getting cut a lot more in AOB, because the 3-3s is just it's quite tough. Like, because people are just going in straight away and they're clashing all the time because they're going so fast and going in so much.
Which do you prefer, as a matter of interest?
Well, I think I prefer the WSB, as because it's more like a professional style, and I think it kind of suits me. Well, I'm not really sure if it does suit me better yet, but it has suited me this year as I've qualified. So I do still love the AOB, getting back in there with all the lads and the team and stuff, and the feeling of a competition going over the 2 weeks was great to be in that again.
In terms of your future, and you know, talking to Joe Ward, two-time European gold champion at 21 years of age, it seems like he's been around forever, because, you know, he has really, in terms of the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Yourself as well, you've a lot of time, you know, in your career to come. And I'm wondering, you know, because you say the WSB is perhaps a better format that suits you, and because there's a long way to go, and maybe Jamie, your brother as well, you look at him and other lads that have gone the professional route, is that something that is very much in your mind now?
Yeah, definitely. You know, after Rio, it's the main goal, you know, is the turn professional and make a ton load of money and make myself a legend of Irish sport.
Well,
it's definitely me.
Well, I mean, that's a brilliant goal to have. And like, I suppose the next month or the next year or so, you can concentrate on Rio. But, you know, equally, it must be a nice feeling to know that you have booked your place on that plane over for the Olympics, and you know, the pressure's off you, if you like.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think I was going to the championships, you know, it was kind of a bit unmotivated, because I knew I didn't have to go into them, but I wanted to go in. And then when I went in there and I wasn't fighting as the highest opposition, what I was fighting in WSB, the top quality fighters, as high as quality. But it was hard to get up for them. So the final, I was really up for the final, as I knew I was fighting probably the best in the competition, bar me. And, you know, it was my best performance. So I think, with a build up to Rio now and having qualified already, it gives me a lot of confidence in myself and in my ability to go there and take that gold medal.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, when you do decide to turn pro and you're throwing a multi-million-dollar contract, don't forget us, right?
Of course. I can't forget my home nation, you know.
No, absolutely. And look, thanks a million, Mick, for everything over the last week. Brilliant champion, and we look forward to the Worlds. Thanks for your time.
Cheers, she. Thanks, take care of farmer's hands there beside you.
Cheers, buddy. Thanks so much.
There's a lot to answer for.
Yeah, he does. Michael Connell there, European champion. Yeah, quite an experience, I have to say. Let's go to Sean Perry quickly in Oriel Park. There has been a goal.
There has indeed an early goal for the home side. The big man for the big occasion, Brian Gartland, heading home a Daryl Horgan corner. It's all going according to script for Stephen Kenny's men. Just 6 minutes on the stopwatch. It's Dundalk 1, St Pat's 0.
Super stuff, Sean. Thanks very much for that. Half-time as well in Tallaght Stadium. And as I say, Shamrock Rovers, a goal to the good there. Just having a quick look around. No other goals to report in the kickoffs around the ground. Well, thanks to the lads. Look, you'll come back in. We didn't really get a chance to talk about your experience and what the plan is, but you're a regular on the show, so we'll get you back in later. On of the week. Alan, we'll talk to you on Wednesday night. We've Andrew McNamara and Patrick Mullins coming in, so get your tip poke out and we might
lovely,
get the last
lovely.
Thanks to JJ and to John who put the show together tonight. Okay, stay tuned. Louise is on the way.